Hey there, before we get started today, I just wanted to say a big thanks to Vitally and ChargeB for sponsoring this episode, which allows me to continue producing Churn FM as an independent creator. Vitally came in at a vital time for me, and perhaps they can for you too. If you're looking to maximize the productivity, visibility, and collaboration of your CS team while increasing NRR and streamlining operations, Vitally is the all-in-one customer success platform to help you do just that. They're also currently giving away a free pair of AirPods to all Churn FM listeners when you take a qualified demo with them. So if you're in the market for a CS platform, visit vitally.io/churnfm today to schedule your demo and get your AirPods. That's vitally.io/churnfm. And in other news, ChargeB just launched their much-awaited 2024 State of the Subscriptions and Revenue Growth Report. With an exclusive focus on retention strategies, pricing trends, and churn rate projections based on a survey of over 300 subscription businesses. I personally got an early sneak peek, and you don't want to miss this one. To grab a copy, you can visit chargebee.com/churnfm. That's chargebee.com/churnfm. With that being said, let's jump to today's episode.
Even if you lose a customer for 1 year, you might have them come back when the economy turns around. So you want to leave them with a good taste in their mouth. So I try to treat our vendors how I'd want to be treated, which is just like fair and transparent, right? Where I might come to one of our vendors and say, hey, guys, the economy is really tough. I actually have to cut a few seats. Is there anything you can do to give me like a little bit of a discount? So I can show my leadership team, hey, this vendor actually really wants to keep our business, right?
How do you build a habit-forming product?
You need to invest.
And you saw these
different... don't just gun for revenue in the door.
This is Churn.fm, the podcast for subscription economy pros. Each week, we hear how the world's fastest-growing companies are tackling churn and using retention to fuel their growth.
How do you build a habit-forming product?
We crossed over that magic threshold to negative churn.
You need to invest in customer success.
It always comes down to retention and engagement.
Completely bootstrapped, profitable, and growing.
Strategies, tactics, and ideas brought together to help your business thrive in the subscription economy. I'm your host, Andrew Michael, and here's today's episode. Hey, Elliot. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. For the listeners, Elliot is the VP of Success at MixMax, a sales engagement platform. Prior to MixMax, Elliot was the Director of Customer Success at QuantMind, and prior to that, spent time at Zenefits. So my first question for you today, Elliot, is what's keeping you up at night and giving you gray hairs?
Yeah, there's more gray hairs than I'm used to seeing when I look in the mirror these days. I think it's tool consolidation and churn. Right now, I think it's tough being in the current macro economy is tough. And a lot of companies, SaaS companies, are trying to find their own ways to navigate it. And I think what's causing my hair to go gray is really, you know, how do you prevent customers from consolidating away from you? How do you become a tool that everyone consolidates towards? Because you can see everybody's been so tight with budget in the past 12 to 24 months. So.
Yeah, it's funny. Like obviously, before the show, you mentioned giving you gray hair, so it's not me just taking the piss out of you, just for the listeners. Like, I was thinking now on the weekend, my sister looked at my beard and she's like, hey, you've got white in your beard. And she's like, hey, you've also got ginger in your beard. And she's like, what do you call that? Is like, because normally I think she's like, you have salt and pepper
in your
beard, but like, or do you have a spicy beard? Something like that. But so I noticed this in the market, this consolidation at Avrio as well. Even in the space we're in, we're starting to see acquisitions happening where more and more tools are gravitating to become these all-in-one solutions. So what I was just saying that before we get started, maybe you can explain to us a little bit about what MixMax is and what you guys do.
Yeah, for sure. So we're like a sales engagement platform, mainly for account executives, SDRs, and customer success managers. So basically anybody who touches, you know, revenue. And we do a lot of things. It starts off with like, you know, an email sequencing tool to engage your prospects or customers with. We also are a scheduling tool where we have like full calendaring. We're also a Salesforce tool where we sync all your data to Salesforce and can do workflow automation off that. And then we also have open tracking. So we're really like a Swiss Army knife that is extremely powerful and intuitive, like easy to use, easy to set up, easy to onboard. And we sit on top of Gmail natively. So if you're a Gmail shop and you want a really like user-friendly tool to run like your sales and success engagement teams off, MixMax is it's a great option.
Nice. And yeah, so you mentioned then this consolidation, something you're seeing in the market. Obviously, you speak to a lot of customers, and I'm sure having some difficult conversations on that end.
Yep.
What are some of those conversations like, and what are you hearing when it comes to consolidation?
It's really interesting, depending on who's driving the need to consolidate, right? What function is having to consolidate? But really, it's just everybody has less budget. And if you are a nice to have, you're getting cut. And if you're a must have, even then you're going to be evaluated on, okay, we need this job to be done. Is there a tool in our stack that this overlaps with that we can do it for less money? Maybe it's even less functional, but we don't mind that. As long as we can have the job to be done at a certain level, we can save money for the business. We can, because in SaaS right now, every board is telling everybody you need to be optimizing for runway, right? And everyone is, runway is the most protected asset you have as a, you know, Series A, Series B company right now, and everyone's optimizing for that.
Yeah, and I like that as well, sort of where you sit on the stack in terms of the budgets. Like, I often mention this, but one of the favorite lines I love from David Dominan, the CEO, was like, when you're building a company, like, a great measure to understand if you're building something worthwhile is like, just ask yourself where on the budget list you lie. Are you the first to go or the last to go when it comes to when things get tough? And you never want to be in that place where you're the first to go as a cost saver. So you mentioned it just really depends on the people you're having the conversation with and where it's coming from. Why do you think that is?
I think it depends on what your tool does and what need you're serving, right? So let's say I'm talking to a customer success team. I want to make sure that we're really powering their workflows with MixMax, which would maybe be saying, hey, we're powering your renewals. Renewal motion, it's very powerful. That ties directly to dollars. I know that we probably are very, got priority in their tech stack, right? Where maybe we're talking to a marketing team. Now, marketing's not, I think generally MixMax is like perfect ideal core, like ICP, like ideal customer profile. And that marketing leader might have another tool that does mass email outreach to, like, you know, 100,000 prospects in one fell swoop. MixMax does outreach too, but we're much more about targeted outreach for like an AE working on sort of like one-to-one conversations with their prospects. So we've had conversations with marketing leaders who might say, hey, I have another tool that can do like email sequencing. So, you know, I'm going to have to cut MixMax, even though I think our AEs really like it. We're going to go to this other tool. It's come down to not just usage, but like, what business use case are we really powering, right? And do people see the value in that?
Mm-hmm. And to the point in the beginning, sort of being able to directly tie that to revenue puts you in a much stronger position to make a case for it internally with the company.
Yeah, exactly, right? You want to tie everything to dollars. You know, it's fun selling to being a customer success leader. Our customers are other CS leaders or other sales leaders. So I always feel like I'm talking to a colleague, you know, when we're working with our customers, and you just understand, hey, if it's a sales leader, an SDR leader, they have a number to be hitting. And if we're helping them hit that number, we're going to feel a lot more protected when it comes to renewal and have a lot more chance at, you know, continuing the partnership. So.
Mm-hmm. And are you having any similar conversations yourself? So obviously the one is that coming towards MixMax, like, have you had to be on the other end and have these conversations with other service providers yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, one of the big things that I like about MixMax is we want to be a good actor in the space. We want to be easy to work with. I'm sure you've heard people say, like, hey, even if you lose a customer for 1 year, you might have them come back when the economy turns around. So you want to leave them with a good taste in their mouth. So I try to treat our vendors how I'd want to be treated, which is just like fair and transparent, right? Where I might come to one of our vendors and say, hey, guys, the economy is really tough. I actually have to cut a few seats. Is there anything you can do to give me like a little bit of a discount so I can show my leadership team, hey, this vendor actually really wants to keep our business, right? And that can be really helpful, right? So I've had to have the same types of conversations where it's like, hey, is there something that you can do? We want to grow in the future and we, you know, we'd appreciate it. And I think the good people, they take that to heart, right? And they know like a year or two from now, we'd want to say, hey, we want to keep this vendor. We want to grow with them because they helped us out.
Yeah. It must be challenging though as well when you're having pretty much every conversation similar to that where it's like, hey, we need a discount. We need to show our leadership how we can maintain. How do you manage these conversations then? And how do you effectively try to carve out a nice middle ground?
I think one thing is you can understand when someone's just basically running a play on you and they're like, okay, they've literally said this to every vendor. And that's okay. I get it. Like, people have a job to do and they've been told to do something. And so I think it always just starts from a place of being like honest and transparent. Like, hey, this is how we're powering your business. This is what your usage looks like on the platform. And like, based on that, like, we feel like our pricing is fair, right? We might have someone who's going to ask us for a discount, but they've reduced seats because they had a layoff. I think you have to absolutely be able to say, hey guys, like, since you've laid off seats, I can't give you a discount. That's against our volume pricing schedule, right? Or, hey, you know, you say yes to things. Yes, I can give you a discount, but I need you to grow. If you can commit to those extra 20 seats, I'm happy to give you that price that you're looking for, right? Trying to find those win-wins, or if you do say yes to someone, you're working on a mutual concession, right? Mm. You know, what things can both companies give each other where, hey, if we're giving you some price flexibility in the short term, what can you do to maybe feature the partnership, a case study, something that makes it mutually beneficial for both parties?
Worth, yeah. And when it comes to sort of preparing the team, obviously having a lot of these conversations now and seeing consolidation, what are some of the things that you're working with your team to try and help alleviate the pressure?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we first hired our CSM team, it's a smaller team and they were much more suited towards classic customer success work, right? So our CSMs actually handle the renewal conversations. But the people that we've hired at MixMax, they're not salespeople. They're not account managers. They're not coin operated. They're driven to get the people the value, to be really product led. So there has been a bit of a shift in like, hey, how do we train these folks to have the commercial conversation? And it really is, one, set yourself up to have leverage in that commercial conversation by doing everything right coming when it comes to onboarding, implementation, and making sure that customer has a successful outcome, like in the first 3 to 6 months, right? Because then the commercials can kind of take care of themselves. You know, it is on just training folks on like, here's how you deal with objections. Here's how you can actually say yes to something, but ask for something in return. Here's how we can make sure that if someone asks why maybe we're doing a price increase, we can speak to here's the 10 or 15 features that we've rolled out that are actually the customers using, right? Things that affect them and they can take to their boss and say, hey, this is why, you know, we have the price we have on MixMax. So it really is just, it's a training thing, right? It's like working out, you know, how do you get good at doing renewals or how do you get good at having pricing conversations? It's just like weightlifting, right? You have to put in the reps. You have to put in the time. And our team's gotten a lot of reps when it comes to commercials in the last 6 to 12 months. The amount of time we spend on commercials is, I'd say, risen exponentially. So yeah, we just work together on it every week, hashing out different deals, different things that we can work on. And it's been great to see folks grow.
Interesting. And you say like sort of the work on commercials has risen quite a bit. Is that due to the downward pressure in the market specifically, or is it also growth that you're seeing at MixMax?
It's both, really, right? So we have larger customers coming in, right? And those type of commercial conversations are going to be more mature with more mature buyers. And it's also just due to the pressure in the market, right? Everyone, to your point, is going to be asking, you know, hey, Elliot, hey, MixMax, what can we do on price? We're cutting tools. And if you can't help me, we're going to have to cut, right? Mm-hmm. I think those are the same conversations happening everywhere in SaaS today. And that's just a different buying cycle. It's just a different renewal cycle than, say, what was happening in 2021, right? Or early 2022. It's just different types of conversations.
For sure. And so obviously the one side of things is discussing and renegotiating terms when it comes to their contract that they have with you. What are some of the other ways that you and the team are handling these discussions of consolidation and winning back or retaining your customers effectively?
I think one of the other tools that we have is really, you know, how do we keep customers as sticky as possible? And for us, that's making sure for any new feature releases that we have out that we're getting as many folks on it as possible. We recently had a, you know, fairly substantial upgrade to like our reporting capability in Salesforce, right? And we wanted to make sure we go to market with that for all the applicable customers and make sure they're using it. It's just one other hook that we can get in and make sure that when that economic pressure comes on, we can say, hey, actually, like, we're serving this, we're pushing this, and we're also helping like in Salesforce as well now. So aside from training them and getting them reps and like, you know, here's our stance and here's how we help folks, it's also going back to the core role of a CSM and saying, hey, also, if you do your job when it comes to focusing on adoption and partnership, it doesn't solve everything, right? It's not like a silver bullet, but you're going to put yourself in a better position.
Yeah. So obviously, yeah, as you said, like sort of renegotiating terms, then focusing more on engagement and how you can increase adoption with certain features. So when it comes to those conversations, it becomes a lot easier to have them and gives the CSMs a little bit more firepower. The other thing you mentioned as well was that your team operates a little bit different to most other CSMs and they're having these conversations. What do you think the pros and cons are? So what do you think works really well in the setup, having CSMs manage the renewals? And then what do you think maybe is a bit of a con?
Yeah, I think it works really well, especially maybe in some earlier stages of growth or depending on like what your contract sizes are, right? And it takes out a lot of the friction of sometimes people don't like being sold to, right? Once they've bought once, they're like, okay, this is my main point of contact. They know they're not in another sales cycle. They know they're not being handed off to another person, right? When you have these really complex kind of enterprise models where there's going to be a sales manager, there's going to be an implementation manager, there's going to be also an account manager and a CSM on an account, and maybe even a technical account manager. Like you can get up to like four or five people assigned to an account and customers can really confuse that. So I think having a single dedicated point who literally says, hey, from this point on, my job, I get paid to make sure like Andrew renews, right? That's kind of a powerful statement. And, you know, it's almost like, hey, as a CSM, I work for the customer. I don't work for Mixmax. I work for you. That's great. And I think some of our customers love that, how streamlined it is. And sometimes the commercials aren't that complex, right? If the contract values, you know, if you're not always dealing with a procurement arm, maybe you're dealing with you don't have to go into a, we try to keep our contracts simple when we can, you know, fairly boilerplate terms of service that are industry standard. Sometimes CSMs can handle that, right? And I think it streamlines the process for the customer. And also I love building teams. It's great for your CSM team because they get used to touching the money. And that's actually really great for your business because you can attract certain people and say, hey, I'm going to help you grow your career and help grow your resume, which is what I think a lot of people who are starting out first in customer success or sales joining a SaaS company, they're looking for that exposure. So really cool for the customer. And also I think cool for the people that are working for you. Where this breaks down, right, is sometimes you do need to have someone who is very experienced talking commercials on $1 million contract, who does understand MSAs, red lines, terms of service, indemnification, liability, all of these things that counsel might come in and start actually trying to negotiate against the price. And it becomes a much more in the weeds type of conversation. It takes a certain person with experience to be able to navigate that. So there's just a certain level of complexity where it becomes misaligned to have a CSM handling that. Also, in certain cases, you need separation between church and state, as I like to say, to get really aggressive when it comes to negotiating a contract. This is, I think, kind of the most obvious reason that, you know, people break up these functions and have an account management function, because you don't want to have the same person who's getting really aggressive on price and have to take a hard stance in a negotiation be the person who also was handling an escalation with this account a week ago and has deleveraged themselves, or the person who has to be really nice and friendly to this account a week ago because they were working on training. There needs to be some of that separation there to make sure you have like the most leverage going into the conversation. So those are the reasons why I think it makes a lot of sense to break it out eventually or in certain cases. And we'll do that even at Mixmax, where we'll say, actually, we're going to have, you know, one of our renewal specialists or an account executive handle this particular one.
I just wanted to give a quick reminder that our sponsors of this episode today are Vitaly and ChargeBee. Vitaly are giving away a free pair of AirPods to all qualified demos. So if you're in the market for a new CS platform, make sure to visit vitaly.io/trendfm today. You can also grab a copy of the latest state of the subscription and revenue growth report by visiting chargebee.com/trendfm and let them both know that I sent you. Now back to today's episode.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think it's one of the things I'm hearing more and more now over the last few weeks, actually, is this growing trend where customer success teams are being held a lot more accountable when it comes to the revenue they generate and what the ROI is for the business. And even conversations like recently, Christy Falteris has said, like, what have we been doing all this time? Like, why haven't we been doing this? And we're probably guilty in the space of not asking ourselves these questions sooner, because And I've had conversations where like the best relationships you have are with your CSM. So why are you passing them off onto somebody else when it comes to the renewal time to close those deals? And I think this is definitely what, at least from my feeling and speaking to people in the market, becoming more and more of a trend and a norm where your success team is now being much more closely vetted and measured against the revenue that they retain and increase as well when it comes to expansion. And I'm keen to as well hear then, like from a metrics perspective and the way you measure the team's performance, like how much does this factor in the renewal to their performance?
For us, it definitely ties into a significant portion of the performance. I look at like three main things, right? I'm going to look at net revenue retention, nothing crazy there, activation, as well as some level of upsell. So we track, you know, NRR, but that's very much a lagging indicator. But we're compensated on that when it comes to the CSMs, like on target earnings. And then we want to have more of a leading indicator on activation. What our accounts look like in their first 90 days of using the product? How deeply are they using these different MixMax functions based on what we presume means they're going to be in a place to renew, right? Hey, if we see an account using these five things, we know that we're going to have a much better chance to have a strong renewal conversation. So that's more like the leading indicator. And then we also have a metric on just to what you were just speaking of, how much revenue pipeline can they generate for the sales team, right? I'm not expecting CSMs to like carry a quota, but they do have a quota when it comes to like creating opportunities for sales. You know, understanding that, hey, we've sold to these two business units at this account, but not the other one. So I'm going to see if sales can get in there. Or, hey, I just had a really strong signal from my decision maker that he might be wanting to add in 15 seats from as they grow, like a quarter from now, create an opportunity for the sales team. So we also compensate our CSMs on that, on how many, we just call them CSQLs. I think a lot of businesses have this as well. CS qualified leads, how much we're turning over to sales. So leading indicators in activation, kind of the mid-contract phase piece of some level of expansion that they're quoted on, and then the lagging indicator of NRR. Anything more than that, you can build some really complex models, but at the end of the day, I like keeping comp fairly simple, especially when you're running sort of like a full service CSM team that goes all the way from implementation to renewal. Like, hey, here's the three things that I need you thinking about every day, and like go out and execute those.
And do it. Nice. Yeah. So I think that's also like a great way then when it comes to putting CSMs in control, they really have like understanding of what the final output is that the teams measure on overall, but what are the inputs that impacted and then how they can influence those inputs for themselves specifically. I'm keen to hear as well, like, are there anything interesting or surprising that you do at MixMax when it comes to customer success that you think like listeners of the show might not have heard of or would think quite different as well? Like, I'm keen, like, if you were listening to the show, what would be something that you think would be surprising for others to hear?
Gosh, surprising. You know, I don't know if it's surprising, but I think one of the things that I'm always coaching my team on is when you're dealing, or maybe when you're maybe a younger CS team, or maybe you have younger CSMs or just younger business, you kind of shy away from bad news. I always like tell my team, like, you need to be asking like the scariest, worst questions as much as possible. I kind of have a saying, I'm a little cynical naturally. And I have a saying, like, the best CSMs are like very anxious, where they think, hey, if that customer's quiet, could things be okay? You're like, they could be, but actually, like, you should probably be asking. And that's like, maybe it's not surprising, but I've when I've worked with other teams, sometimes folks are like, well, things seem fine. If you pick at that a little bit more, you're like, well, have they told you that? Or are you just assuming that? And I think sometimes there's this sentiment to say, well, I don't want to have the tough conversation and say, are you looking at other tools? Or, you know, how do you feel about the state of the partnership? Or are we actively in an evaluation? Because maybe they're not, and they're going to leverage that against us or use it as a sign of weakness. To me, any signal is good signal, right? And that's something that I think is just, you could get away with that maybe last year or a year or two ago where you're like, okay, things seem all good. Why would I want to bring up if the relationship is at risk? And today, I think our customers appreciate it where it almost feels like you're continually trying to win their business. So always be asking the hard questions, right? Is something that I even feel like we weren't doing enough of as ourselves that we're really trying to do more. I don't know if that's surprising, but I think it's easier to get away from doing that when business is good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of those things like when business is good, like the card's just going off, renewal, it's done. But the point you made as well, that's like any sort of engagement is good engagement, whether it's like negative feedback or it's like praise. If you're not hearing from customers, I think that's when you need to actually worry the most and have those conversations with them. What's been the biggest mistake that you've made as a leader leading your CS team?
Gosh, I think really the biggest thing was not having enough process in, like initially. We're, you know, kind of at a certain stage of revenue where I would be biasing towards hiring people that I'd say, hey, I'm going to throw you into a very kind of sink or swim environment, right? I'm going to hire people that I know are going to do a good job in that environment. And I think the assumption I was making there was like, oh, everyone's like me, right? And I think that not having that process and really telling people this is how I expect you to act was tough. And we felt some pain from that because I think it was just a shortcoming in myself thinking, oh, well, I know how I approach this situation. So I assume everyone is going to be motivated the same way I am, have the same motivations, do things the same way. And in reality, you know, any leader, once they've gone and started managing teams, you realize that's like absolutely not the case. And you have to have this framework and this process, even if it's not perfect, right? Even if it's just something to give a little bit of guidance, I think that's so important. I mean, we've certainly built that out at MixMax, but that was one of my first missteps where I think it was just, you know, as a leader, you assume, okay, you know, as long as I can create a bunch of people like myself, we're going to be like in a good spot. And that is just such a dangerous way of thinking. And I think something I absolutely stepped in early on when we were building out the team.
Yeah, it's nice. I think it's sort of, as you mentioned, you have those sort of expectations. And I think when you expect people to operate the same as you, that's sort of like the easiest path for you to be let down. And people are different. They come from different perspectives and backgrounds and they have different approaches to problem solving. And I think I've also been guilty of this in the past of like working with people and having certain expectations and then just getting disappointed by them. But when really you should be actually looking and trying to understand how these people work and operate and how you can get the best out of them in their unique ways, but at the same time, giving structure and guidance into what are the expectations and what are we trying to achieve. And having a system, I think, is a great way to help both parties work better together.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the key to like good management is just trying to find, hey, here's someone who's really well-suited to a specific strength. And it actually aligns really well with the problem that the business needs solving, right? When you can find those two things and put it together, like that's where you get really happy people, really motivated people, and really, really solid results. So,
yeah. What's one thing that you know today about churner retention that you wish you knew when you got started with your career?
I think it really is that I remember even back at Zenefits and my other job, we would always struggle on kind of like building out this model. Right. And I think a lot of customer success software out there, they have this idea of, you know, churn scores based on any various amount of inputs you can put in. You can have 50, you can make this as complex or as simple as you want. And I think early on, when we'd look at some of this stuff, especially if you're managing a team at scale, like talking 500, thousands of accounts, there's a reason you have to do this just to scale the business. But I think you also have to realize how imperfect it was and how imperfect these models and things can be. And I didn't know that early starting out. I remember we had a particular score that was like, maybe it was like 65% accurate. And we're like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I'm like, yeah, but oof, that's rough. And the learning is like, there's so much nuance. And that is where I think CSMs make their money, is like being able to understand that nuance. Right? You want to be paying people to do high EQ, high intelligent work where they can maybe validate one of those scores as opposed to being the person who's just being like, well, I sent this QBR and usage is at 60%. So this account is great, right? That's not what I want to pay a CSM to do. I want a CSM to come in and say, actually, I disagree. This account isn't green because of this, that, or the other. And so I wish I knew early on, or I had made the mistake that these scores aren't perfect. And I know a lot of reasons, you know, that they get sold as such because they can work extremely well and some of the models work well. But there's just so much nuance in dealing with customer relationships and SaaS and evolving products and the markets that it's not the end all be all. And I think that's where CSMs can be really impactful, right? Having a human eye to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's like, if you torture the data enough, it'll confess to anything. It's like a quote I've heard previously, and it's fantastic. I think it comes the same way as well. Like when we spend too much time focusing on data and not really understanding that behind these numbers are actually humans, and humans are unpredictable. I think it's always important just to take that stance and look back and say, okay, yes, maybe this is what we are seeing, but there's a myriad of reasons for the way that we behave the way that we behave. And for a large majority of the time, they may be correct, but there's also that good percentage of time where we need to question things and be a little bit more cautious. But yeah, I like that. I love it. What's one way, and what's something that you'd like to share with the listeners before we drop off? I see we're up on time now, but is there any sort of final thoughts you want to leave them with? How can they keep up to speed with your work?
Yeah, if you want to, you know, keep up to speed with what we're doing at MixMax, you can follow our product blog and just go to mixmax.com. I love the space we're in right now. It's just so... Sales engagement is such an interesting space with everything that's happening around the different solutions. And, you know, everyone's working to save dollars. Sales engagement solutions are all about actually having positive ROI and driving your sales motion. So we'd love to get, you know, anybody to check us out at mixmax.com if you're interested in that. And I would just leave people with, like, be good to each other. Like, I think it's easy. Like, some of my easiest conversations, even if we're talking about a tough customer that I've lost or a really tough escalation, you build the most rapport with folks when you respond to challenging times in a professional manner. I think I always take note of that. That's how I always think of vendors. And I think, you know, especially in the current economy in SaaS, we're all under a lot of pressure. And I think it was just sort of, you know, it's the golden rule. Treat your customers and your vendors how you'd like to be treated. And, you know, maybe karma's not a real thing, but eventually at some point, someone's going to come back and say thank you. And that can be a great thing for your business too. So I'll just be good to each other out there.
Very nice. I like that way to end the show as well. And Elliot, thanks so much for joining. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. And I wish you best of luck now as you navigate through these different times that we're in.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Cheers.
And that's a wrap for the show today with me, Andrew Michael. I really hope you enjoyed it and you're able to pull out something valuable for your business. To keep up to date with churn.fm and be notified about new episodes, blog posts, and more, subscribe to our mailing list by visiting churn.fm. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have any feedback, good or bad, I would love to hear from you. And you can provide your blunt, direct feedback by sending it to andrew@churn.fm. Lastly, but most importantly, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review, as it really helps get the word out and grow the community. Thanks again for listening. See you again next week.
And with that, I just want to say a big thanks again to Vitaly and ChargeBee for sponsoring this episode. If you do decide to check them out at vitaly.io/churnfm and chargebee.com/churnfm, please make sure to let them know I sent you, because tracking podcast advertising is traditionally very difficult, and I want to make sure we deliver value to them both so that we can retain them as our sponsors. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next week.